Welcome to Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce. Tribes in South Dakota are at odds with that state's governor after she made unsubstantiated claims linking them to drug cartels. Three tribes have taken the extraordinary step of banishing her from their lands. But the rhetoric from Governor Kristi Noem is only the latest in a handful of instances of officials targeting tribes with unsupported comments that invite harmful public perceptions. We'll hear from tribal officials about how they're responding to the escalating war of words right after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. An intertribal council from Native nations, mostly in Wisconsin, wants to create a substance use recovery center for young people in an area that's considered a treatment desert for recovery facilities. As WXPR's Hannah Davis-Reed reports, they've hit a roadblock.
The Great Lakes Intertribal Council, or GLITCI, is a nonprofit organization that serves Native people in Wisconsin, Michigan, and Minnesota. Over the past 20 years, they've worked on plans for a recovering wellness center for young people. The 36-bed facility is designed to treat and support Indigenous youth with culturally relevant services and amenities. It would also serve non-Native youth. However, the local town board of Cashin doesn't want the center in their area and has been fighting against it for the last year. Last week, the Oneida County Planning and Zoning Committee denied the permits to build the center. The committee cited a concern of a drop in nearby property values and that GLITCI could place the property in a sovereign trust as its reasoning for rejecting the permit. This is President Shannon Holsey of the Stockbridge Munsee Band of Mohicans, one of GLITCI's member tribes.
You have to remember, sovereign immunity is of the sovereign. You're talking about 12 tribal nations that are involved in this project. So there wouldn't even be, there would not even be continuity to the involvement of whose sovereign immunity it was.
GLITCI does plan to continue with the project, saying it's too important to not reassess and move forward on. I'm Hannah Davis-Reed reporting.
This time of year is typically maple syrup season in northern Michigan when daytime highs get above freezing while nights stay cold. But this year's mild winter meant that people began tapping their trees unusually early in January and February. The Grand Traverse Band of Ottawa and Chippewa Indians took the warmer weather as a sign to let their sugar maples rest. Interlochen Public Radio environmental reporter Ellie Katz has more.
Tara John is gathering kindling for a fire outside the Grand Traverse Band Sugar Shack in Peshawby Town. Off in the distance, we can barely hear the sound of a woodpecker.
That woodpecker is saying that those bugs are underneath the bark are starting to wake up.
John is a tribal member and works with the band's agriculture department on restoring traditional foodways and food sovereignty. She says the sound of woodpeckers are just one of many ecological signs that the trees are waking up again, that it's time to gather for sugarbush.
We are coming back to this forest, to this grove, to these maples. We call them Mininautig, and that's us, our standing brother, our elder brother.
Tapping trees for maple sap, syrup, and sugar is an old Anishinaabe tradition, one that John and the tribe are working to strengthen after generations of settlement made it harder to practice and pass down.
The beginning of the year is sugarbush. When we report for sugarbush, that's like we check in with our family, get the good gossip, we laugh together, you know, argue, yell at nieces, nephews, you know, everything that families do.
The signs to return and tap the trees came too early to Peshawby Town this year, or didn't come at all. Woodpeckers and baby skunks started appearing in January, and the snow didn't come all the way up to the trunks of the trees.
I asked my elders about what to do and what to say, and ask the trees, because they have not been respected or appropriately thanked or allowed to rest for quite a long time.
With that input, she decided the Grand Traverse Band's agriculture department would let the trees rest and then hopefully tap next year. And they're not alone in that choice. Several other tribes, like the Sault Ste. Marie tribe and the Saginaw Chippewa, are doing the same.
That was Ellie Katz, and I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support by Sanofsky Chambers Law, championing tribal sovereignty and Native American rights since 1976, from opioids litigation to treaty rights to tribal self-governance, with offices in Washington, D.C., New Mexico, California, and Alaska. Sanofsky Chambers Law.
Support by the Gathering of Nations Powwow, a live event taking place April 25th, 26th, and 27th on the powwow grounds of Expo New Mexico, featuring song, dance, traders market, horse parade, and more. Tickets available at gatheringofnations.com and at the gates.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce. The Standing Rock Sioux Tribe just banished South Dakota Republican Governor Kristi Noem from their tribal land. They're the third tribe in that state to take the uncommon action after Noem publicly claimed tribal leaders are, in her words, personally benefiting from drug cartels. At no point has Noem provided any evidence that such a connection exists. Noem's unsupported claim comes after another governor, Kevin Stitt in Oklahoma, challenged his state's tribes with a number of comments and official actions. He once claimed tribes were on the verge of setting up on-demand abortion clinics. Today on our show, we'll talk with tribal leaders about what they're doing to counter unsubstantiated and divisive rhetoric from public officials. Join our conversation with your comments and questions. Give us a call. The number's 1-800-996-2848. 1-800-996-2848. Joining us now from Madison, Wisconsin, is Richard Monette. He is a law professor at the University of Wisconsin-Madison Law School and a member of the Turtle Mountain Band of Chippewa Indians. Hello, Richard. Welcome back to NAC.
Hi, Sean. Thank you for having me on your show today.
Speaking with us from Tulsa, Oklahoma, is Principal Chief Chuck Hoskin, Jr. of the Cherokee Nation. Hello, Chief Hoskin, and welcome back to you as well.
Well, wonderful to be on with you.
And joining us from the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation in South Dakota is President Frank Starr Comes Out. He's the president of the Oglala Sioux Tribe and the chairman of the Great Plains Tribal Chairmen's Association. Greetings, President Starr Comes Out, and welcome to you too. Okay, thank you, President. I heard you faintly. We'll go ahead and get your audio fixed here in just a moment. Let's hear first from South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem. This is audio from a video response shared on her social media pages where she references the tribe's responses to her comments about tribal leaders.
Hi, everyone. You may have seen the news recently that some of our tribal leaders are upset with me because I told the truth about the Mexican drug cartel's activity on our reservations. It's true, there are dangerous cartels in South Dakota, and they're instigating drug addiction, committing murder, rape, human trafficking, and so much more. Because of this, I called on all of our tribal leaders to banish these cartels from tribal lands. Instead, some are choosing to banish me. Now, that doesn't solve any of our problems. By working with me, we can protect our people and our communities. We could sign law enforcement agreements where we uphold tribal sovereignty, also make sure that we are upholding tribal law, and protecting our communities would be a great start. In fact, every time a South Dakota tribe has asked me for assistance, I've done all that I can to help when I was in Congress and as governor. Now, many tribal residents know this. They have texted me words of support saying you're not banned from my home or my town or my business, and I do appreciate this, of course, but I'm going to continue to speak the truth. I'm going to fight to protect every single life of every South Dakotan, including those who live on our tribal reservation areas, because they deserve safety and security. I'll keep you posted. Thank you so much, and God bless you.
That was Governor Noem responding to being banished from three South Dakota reservations. Now, Richard Monette, I want to start with you today. The U.S. historical record, it is littered with disparaging remarks from political leaders directed at Native Americans. But here today we have a state governor linking tribal officials to drug cartels. Does that represent a new level of verbal divisiveness for modern civil discourse?
Well, if we can call what's happening that, right? Well, I mean, let's cut to the chase on the easy one. The politics of Donald Trump and, you know, MAGA have turned racist dog whistles, frankly, into hateful bullhorns, right? And so one thing for sure, politicians like Governor Noem are feeling freer to spew hate. And it's irresponsible. It's frankly immature, you know, coupled with social media, you know, turning a lot of the populace into, you know, impressionable parrots, frankly. This is really dangerous for America's understanding and everything that we've been trying to do and teach for years. You know, I think, I mean, sure, tribal leaders are public figures, and libel law makes it more difficult for a public figure to sue. But it's more difficult, but not impossible. And the tests are a little higher. But frankly, some of this stuff borders on, you know, a cause of action.
Now, it's no secret Kristi Noem is a possible running mate for Donald Trump in the upcoming election. These comments, do you think they're directed specifically at her constituents in South Dakota, or is she thinking of a larger audience?
Well, you know, I think that same audience exists in almost every state. So it's that audience across the board. You know, there's going to be people who tune this out and understand who she is. But again, there's going to be a lot of people who will get some of, if there are dog whistles in here, it's her saying things like our reservations, right? And, you know, these are not your reservations. These are our reservations, right? So those kinds of things, you know, along with her little political twist on, you know, I asked them to banish the cartels. They decided to banish me first, you know. Those kinds of little twists actually are going to go a long ways with that crowd. And so I think that while it might be wise to sit back and let this just run its course, I think it probably is going to call for a response from somebody higher up the ladder. Now, whether they will do that, whether a Biden campaign will do that, or Kamala Harris might take this on as VP, this, I think, has to be addressed.
Do you think Kristi Noem is an outlier here? Or are you seeing a trend of more divisive political rhetoric aimed at tribal nations throughout the country?
She's not an outlier. We are hearing similar things from people like Governor Stitt from Oklahoma, others, frankly. And so I maybe, you know, the division is getting clearer and hopefully their side of the divide is smaller. So it appears to be an outlier. But again, you know, we've just been living in a time where people are feeling freer to do this sort of thing. But, you know, I want to be careful here because I don't want to sound like I'm making this argument. It's more that I'm just a passive observer here. You're hearing the sense of on our side of wanting to assert sovereignty in its real terms. So when the tribes say, we're going to banish you from our territory, one of those two strongest prongs of sovereignty, real territory, and the other one being a distinct peoples, is being pushed to the forefront. And that's a good thing for our tribal leaders, in my opinion, to think about again and to be teaching our young people that our territory and our territorial boundaries mean something. Okay. And so I'm kind of liking that sort of twist happening here. I don't think there will be any legal ramifications. I've been asked that. I can't think of any. But here's the problem. We have this other side, this distinct peoples, and this is a tough one. And I'm going to put this out there, and then maybe I'll take some flack for it. But imagine being Governor Noem or Governor Stitt and having people who reside in reservations, tribal members, who vote for you or against you, more likely. And then you don't get to govern their territory or them, right? And this is happening because increasingly, and this is a recent phenomenon, we think it's been a long time recent, where tribal members who reside in the reservation are wanting to vote for or against people like Governor Noem. And we're bringing race-based lawsuits to make that happen. And it's basically cloaking us more of a racial identity instead of that political identity that's been the cornerstone of our sovereignty. And I think the frustration that we're seeing is very much tied to those cases working their way up the federal ladder, including in the Eighth Circuit where they are, where she is. We have two cases in the Eighth Circuit working their way up on that very question. And they are getting frustrated. And I think Indian country and tribal leaders need to take a step back and think about this again and discuss this if this is very clearly a reaction to it.
Richard, let's talk about the potential damage here when a government official, a high-ranking governor, a government official such as a Kristi Noem or a Kevin Stitt, saying outlandish remarks about Native Americans. I mean, what does that really mean, and what does that do to not just tribal nations, but Native American people across the country when we're subjected to those types of remarks?
Well, you know, look, I mean, I grew up on the reservation, right? And I went back and forth to public schools, Catholic schools, and I'm not alone. You know, we get what this oppression has been like. And, you know, this is abusive, frankly. And while I think most of us are tough enough to take it, our skin has been thickened. We have been turned into some of the most resilient survivors on the planet. Make no mistake, it hurts. And the ones that hurt the most, I think, and I get worried about is the old folks and the youth. Because the youth learn from this atmosphere. And, you know, unless we're taking the time to teach them right here about what our objective is, this cultural identity that derives from our sovereignty and why we're so jealously protective of it, I'm afraid, you know, this kind of thing is really going to skew the teaching for our youth. It's the kind of underhanded sort of way that some of the mascots have done. You know, it's just our youth see it, and you know, they get introverted, they get humiliated, sort of. They feel like they have to be strong or faux strong, and it's just all these things that other people don't have to deal with. So whether we're strong enough or not, you know, why does this have to continue? And so make no mistake, this is mentally, emotionally abusive behavior. And the legal system ought to find a way to address it. The political system ought to find a way to address it as well.
All right. And here we are. You know, the election is starting to really heat up now. And through the summer, I imagine we're probably just going to continue to hear this type of rhetoric going forward in the months to come. So certainly frustrating, certainly alarming, disparaging. Richard describes it as emotional and psychological abuse. Do you agree? Would you agree with that comment, that what Kristi Noem's words are abusive remarks? Give us a call. Let us know your thoughts. 1-800-99-NATIVE. We're going to take a short break, and we will be right back. Oklahoma City is gearing up to host Native American fans of sci-fi movies, comic books, puppets, and superheroes. Indigipop X is coming up, and we'll hear about what's in store, including a nighttime stickball game and an entire day devoted to reservation dogs. That's on the next Native America Calling.
Support provided by Amerind. Amerind is 100% tribally owned and partners with tribes and their businesses to provide affordable commercial insurance coverage, protect tribal sovereignty, and strengthen Native American communities by helping to keep dollars in Indian country. Information about property, liability, commercial auto, and workers' comp available at Amerind.com. That's Amerind.com.
Thank you for listening to Native America Calling. We're talking about unsubstantiated claims and divisive rhetoric from public officials that specifically target Native Americans. What are your thoughts on that matter? Do you hear targeted comments from political officials about your tribal community? Let us know. Call us at 1-800-996-2848. That number is also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And you can also comment on our website and social media pages. Let's move on now to Tulsa, Oklahoma, where we have Principal Chief Chuck Hoskin Jr. of the Cherokee Nation. And Principal Chief, thank you again for joining our show. And you've been very vocal about Oklahoma Governor Kevin Stitt's actions and rhetoric aimed at tribes. Have you been able to figure out the source of this apparent hostility that he displays so publicly?
Well, I've certainly tried to figure it out, and maybe in some ways you'd need to be a trained psychologist to really get to the core of it. I mean, the man's a citizen of the Cherokee Nation, and yet he's the most anti-tribal sovereignty governor in the history of the state of Oklahoma, and that's a pretty high bar. I mean, in our history we've had some anti-tribal governors. He takes the cake; it's not even close. I really, though, at this point, take him for what he says. I mean, there may be some side political motives in terms of, you know, a lot of these governors seem to be auditioning for the next role, a cabinet seat, a vice president nod. I really think he looks at tribes and is genuinely puzzled by them. I think he genuinely does not understand why here in the 21st century tribes ought to have the ability to govern. He views them as impediments. And I see that in his rhetoric, and I also see it in his policies and his actions. I mean, he really looks at governing as a transactional proposition, and he looks at tribal sovereignty, to the extent he has to deal with it, as kind of a zero-sum game. So any increase in tribal sovereignty, in his mind, absolutely comes at the expense of the state of Oklahoma. And that's not how the real world works, but that's how the world he sees it works. And so I really think he doesn't see a role for tribes. He would like to see tribal governments effectively eliminated, and he does what he can in terms of policies to make that happen. And his rhetoric is very harsh, and it's very diminishing, and I think it does damage to not only Cherokee Nation and the tribes here, but really all of Indian country. I mean, the man's a governor.
Now, when governors did make some of these really outlandish remarks, like Oklahoma tribes are planning to set up on-demand abortion clinics. How hard is that for you as principal chief to correct the record in situations like that?
Well, it is hard because that particular comment was on Fox News, and so he's all over the country, and as things happen on Sunday shows, that becomes part of an additional news cycle that goes nationwide. And so there's a couple of things I think going on here that make it difficult. One is we are in a period of American politics in which there's been, I think, a real shift in terms of elected officials and politicians just operating in a fact-free zone. They're just untethered to facts. Now, that's not new in American politics. What I think has changed is they're not paying a particular price for that. I mean, they're, in fact, gaining something for that within their particular political sphere. And I think that's something that, as Americans, we have to collectively reconcile. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, we're rewarding collectively a lot of folks who just are untethered to the truth. They go on cable shows and other shows all the time and get away with it. And we got to stop letting them do that. I think when that rhetoric is directed towards tribes, we are so marginalized in this country, just in terms of sheer numbers, that most Americans don't have a real good frame of reference about what tribes are, what they stand for, what tribal sovereignty is. And so when they hear a governor, which automatically lends some credibility to the person, say those things, that fills a big void in people's minds about what tribes are, what they can do. And so I have no doubt there are many Americans who believe the absolute lie that we were setting up abortion clinics, just like folks apparently across the country may believe Governor Noem's absolute lie that tribal lands within her state are being run roughshod over by the cartel. And so that's the real damage there. We already have our work cut out for us to explain to the country after, you know, a few centuries at it, who we are, that we were here first, that we were governing ourselves just fine before folks got lost during the so-called Age of Discovery, that we've tried to govern ourselves when the United States will take its boot off our neck once in a while, and we do amazing things. But it's tough to penetrate the public consciousness. But then here comes a governor who just lies. So what we try to do is push back on it with facts. I mean, you have to flood the zone with facts. And then you got to get a lot of, I think, third-party validators. You got to get folks that aren't tribal leaders. I mean, in Oklahoma, sometimes people are probably tired of hearing from Chief Hoskin. They'd rather hear from a school teacher or a mayor or a county commissioner or one of our friends that says, hey, these folks are credible. They're good people. This stuff is lies. And so that's what I think we're trying to do. But it's a challenge.
Principal Chief, as you mentioned, the irony here is that Kevin Stitt is a citizen of the Cherokee Nation, and that creates such an interesting dynamic. And here it is. He's your governor, but you're his chief. Do people, and I'm thinking specifically of Cherokee Nation citizens, do they ever ask you who trumps who in this situation?
Well, sort of. I haven't heard it framed in quite that way, although that's an interesting way to put it, and not an illegitimate way to put it. I sometimes will quip that I wish the governor would listen to his chief, and he may say the same thing. I wish the chief would listen to his governor. It is an interesting and odd and really troubling dynamic. I can tell you the governor and I share two things in common. We were reelected overwhelmingly. I can't parse out all the way the votes went. He'll claim that, you know, he won Cherokee country overwhelmingly, so the people are with him. I can tell you from anecdotal experience and the efforts we put into my reelection campaign last year, the engaged Cherokee citizens don't like Kevin Stitt's policies. They really don't. They're really with the Cherokee leadership. And so it creates all sorts of unusual dynamics. Of course, in the state of Oklahoma, we have straight party ticketing, and we've got a real trend towards the GOP that's been going on for decades. And so there's a lot of complicated reasons maybe to explain the fact that he and I don't get along from a policy and political standpoint. We're both Cherokees, and we both get reelected on diametrically different messages. And so I can't figure all that out. But we exist in the same plane in terms of this part of Oklahoma history, American history, Cherokee history. We at Cherokee Nation, though, are not only making the best of it, I think we're getting the best of him. I mean, he keeps losing when he goes to court. The legislature's not with him, and they're in his same party predominantly. And so I think he's on an island often when he's taking these harsh tribal stances. And so in that regard, it doesn't make a tremendous amount of political sense, at least here locally.
Now, you talked about how, you know, when he makes some of these remarks, or when Kristi Noem makes an outlandish remark, you know, cable news, they seize on that, that gets publicized. But for those of us who aren't in Oklahoma, aren't in South Dakota, maybe not paying really close attention to what every word out of an elected leader's mouth is, how often does Kevin Stitt actually make remarks like this? And how often are you having to do damage control to get the truth out there, Chief?
Well, quite a bit. The false claim about abortion clinics got the most attention because it was national news. But I would say every few weeks, maybe on a monthly basis, he tends to kind of get into hysterics over some aspect of tribal sovereignty, particularly in the wake of McGirt, which he keeps talking about, saying it's a disaster for Oklahoma. It's the most dangerous and damaging thing that's ever happened to the state of Oklahoma, which is just an incredible statement when you think about McGirt reaffirmed the sovereignty of tribal nations that existed before anyone ever heard of a state of Oklahoma. But he makes those sorts of statements frequently, and so there's frequent occasion to push back. I think what we are benefiting from here, and I'm not contrasting us with other tribal lands, I'm just saying my frame of reference is here, is when we say that's wrong, we got a lot of other people saying the Cherokees are right. And even if they don't say they're right because they don't know, they say, we trust the Cherokee Nation, and they do. I'm not saying, you know, 100% favorability, but a lot of opinion leaders, a lot of stakeholders, a lot of elected officials trust the Cherokee Nation. And so when we push back, we've got some we don't got a lot of headwinds. We got a lot of wind to our back. And so I have felt good about our effectiveness in countering him. But having to counter him so often really distracts us from a lot of stuff we could be doing, not only from a rhetorical standpoint and educating the public, but in a policy standpoint. I mean, I always say the state of Oklahoma ought to be head and shoulders above any state in the country because of the tribes. But you got to have a governor that wants to work with the tribes. We've got one now that sees any strength by the tribes, again, as diminishing the state. That sort of a leader does not lend himself to the kind of cooperative progress that we ought to be making in Oklahoma. But again, a lot of folks are with us, and that's good.
Let's take a caller now. Our first caller of the day, Chanupa, listening on Keeley Radio in Pine Ridge, South Dakota. Hello, Chanupa.
Hey, Hokahe. Another big segment to you, Sean, for this understanding that to the gentleman that was talking, I wanted to share something real briefly and quickly. We understand nature's dynamics in the political realm. Okay, we understand that. But racism starts from the home, okay? I don't care how anybody looks at it, racism does. a kid addressed it to us one day, and I was meeting with Councilman George Ferber. He passed away, and Deb Hadcock. They were on the county commission, okay? And those two were the only two individuals that stood on natives, you know, coattail because of our, you know, involvement in the political realm. Now, the most important thing that we must understand and kind of get this man in the white man's term, okay? And people get offended when I do that. My grandpa once said, Roy Martin said, when you remove a people from the forest, the people of the forest become unknown. And what becomes unknown, you want to destroy. So whether it's rhetoric or racism, that fact is still prevalent today in the year 2024 on April 10th or 11th, whatever the date is. Because here in Kili Radio, we see that happening even in a tribal government standpoint. And I know we can challenge it, but it has to come from we adults. Family members have to quit teaching their people that type of racial rhetoric in order for us to continue to strive for freedom and independence. Back to you, Sean, and this is a beautiful segment you're having, and that's what's going to make a long story short. Ha-ho from Porcupine on the Pioneers Indian Reservation.
All right, appreciate that, Chanupa. And Principal Chief, I want to go back to you because our caller talks about racism starting at home. And you talked earlier about how a lot of the reason that Governor Stitt can be effective is because a lot of people in Oklahoma really don't understand tribal sovereignty. They really don't understand the dynamics of Oklahoma tribes. And I'm curious, have you folks had any success with regard to just providing more education and awareness and a better understanding so more people in Oklahoma, native or non-native, can just listen to Kevin Stitt and say, no, he's way off base. He doesn't understand sovereignty like you've described.
Yeah, in fact, I think we've made a lot of progress. I think the challenge that really was my the focus earlier is across the country, there's just sort of a dearth of knowledge. I'm not saying Oklahoma is a land in which everybody grows up knowing tribal sovereignty and understanding it. They're on a learning curve, but the curve is going in the right direction. And I think some of the ways we're making progress has been just sort of PR. I mean, we sort of flood social media and other media platforms with the good news about what we're doing. In fact, Governor Stitt spurred that himself when he attacked the gaming compacts here in Oklahoma in 2019. What did we do? We pooled resources, started a campaign called the United for Oklahoma, which told a lot of these stories in a way that was really relatable for Oklahomans to understand about how do tribes help out with local police departments? How do we use our sovereignty and our relationship with the United States to leverage infrastructure dollars, say, to a state that is kind of a poor state in terms of its ability to meet some of these infrastructure challenges? How is, in the wake of McGirt, how is that something that's workable if we work together and showing them real examples about how, say, cross-deputization works, which was a mystery, but really part of fundamental parts of tribal sovereignty, but a mystery to a lot of Oklahomans until they sort of were faced with it. But we at least now have the resources and the internal sort of talent to put that message out there. So I think we're making progress just strictly from a PR standpoint. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I think tribes need to do that where they can. Oklahoma public schools are getting better at being interested and curious about tribal history. That's from an educator standpoint. The backlash to a lot of the, I think, more progressive views about education has been laws like Oklahoma House Bill 1775, which said that, we've got to stop making people feel bad about history in classrooms. Well, if you're going to teach about the Trail of Tears, people are going to feel bad. And so there's a little bit of a backlash. I'm not saying to tribes there, but to a more of a progressive view of education. But we need the schools to continue helping us teach a generation of Oklahomans what it means to be tribal and what tribes mean. So I think we're making progress in this state, but we start from a position in which the knowledge base is very low over generations and generations. The other thing is this, and I kind of gathered that from the gentleman who called in from Pine Ridge. It starts at home, and if I think I heard part of what he said right, we at Cherokee Nation are trying to make sure our generation of young people understand where we came from. We can't hope, and I say this to our people a lot, we can't hope for the rest of the country to understand our history, our treaties, the laws, the basic laws that undergird tribal sovereignty if we don't understand them ourselves. And so we're looking internal to make sure that we've got this internal capacity, particularly with young people, to be the ones that are the champions and the people that can go out and with their own rhetoric and be champions for tribes. So it's an all-of-the-above strategy. I think it's working in Oklahoma for tribes, though.
Principal Chief, how often are you able to sit down at a table, just you and Governor Stitt one-on-one, and have a conversation?
It's never happened. And we've had brief in-person interactions. I went to his inauguration and wished him well. That came on the heels of making an historic effort to defeat him. But look, I can read the results as good as the next fella. And so I went to his inauguration to wish him well. We've not had occasion to do that. And sometimes I do have to, you know, sort of look in the mirror and say, look, am I being the kind of leader that the Cherokee people deserve by if I'm not engaging with him? Boy, sure makes it tough because he talks in falsehoods about tribes. He insults the Cherokee Nation. He takes actions to undermine us. And so, and I've got a lot of other leaders in the state that we can work with, that we do sit down with. I mean, I sat down with the Speaker of the House of Representatives in the state of Oklahoma. I sat down with the President pro tem. I sat down with the Attorney General. All of them come from his same party, and all of them oppose him in so many ways when it comes to his views of tribal sovereignty. So the way I look at it is I've only got so many hours in the day. I've only got so many days in the year to try to advance the interests of the Cherokee Nation. How much time should I spend sitting down with a man that believes that my office shouldn't really exist and that the Cherokee Nation shouldn't function as a tribe? I mean, I really think he believes that. Or should I spend my time working around him and trying to make the best of it? But I will work with him when I can. I mean, we just signed a tobacco compact about a month ago, so there are times when we work together. But in terms of sitting down and breaking bread, hadn't happened. That'd be great if it did, but it's only great if it advances the interests of the Cherokee Nation. I'm not sure it does.
All right. Principal Chief Oskin, we're going to have to take a short break, and we will be right back.
Support from Dartmouth College, hosting its first Tribal Leadership Academy August 4th to the 10th in New Hampshire. Up to 25 new or appointed tribal government leaders and a group of experienced presenters will consider intergovernmental relations, economic development, healthcare, natural resources, and tribal law and order. Dartmouth College will cover the travel and attendance costs. Application available at DartmouthTribalLeadershipAcademy.com. Application deadline is May 1st, 2024.
You're listening to Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce. We are discussing recent comments by political figures targeting Native American tribes. Join this discussion with a comment or question by calling 1-800-996-2848. We still got plenty of time to get your calls in. 1-800-996-2848. Let's move now to South Dakota, Pine Ridge, where we have our next guest. President Frank Starr comes out of the Oglala Sioux tribe. And President Starr comes out. Thank you again for joining us today. Welcome to our show. And earlier we played that clip from South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem. And I just want to ask you, when you first heard those remarks associating South Dakota tribes with Mexican drug cartels, what was your initial reaction when you heard that?
My name is President Frank Starr comes out of the Oglala Sioux tribe. And I just want to say welcome, thank you for welcoming me on your show today. I was upset, you know, and some of the meetings that had happened. And one thing I want to say is, no, I did not meet with the governor of South Dakota. She made an unexpected appearance at a meeting between tribes and the federal government agency uninvited, you know, and no cameras were allowed in that room at that point. I think people need to realize that this governor compromised our sovereignty by attacking the Oyate. She sent letters to tribes without proper time to respond for a consultation. Soon afterwards, she began to discredit tribes at local town hall meetings by attacking our internal controls and our unique peace treaty relationship with the federal government. She attacked our communities. She attacked our membership, our youth, and our sovereignty. Our unique peace treaties with the federal government is a nation-to-nation relationship that requires notification for consultation. The governor needs to also address her current state legislative liaison on Indian affairs for the Great Plains region. He is not in the best interest of the tribes representing her office or the state, and it showed. Respect for tribal nations it is paramount. The governor needs to know that tribes do not engage in politics. Using tribes for political gain lacks good relations and divides people, as you can see, the Republicans and Democrats. With that being said, you know, and I did state this when the tribal chairmen meet, that the Ochete Shakoi Oyate need to stand with the Oglala. You know, again, you know, we're older than South Dakota, and we don't belong to the state of South Dakota. And that's one of the statements I put out there on social media just recently, and I stand behind that.
President Starr comes out, the Oglala Sioux tribe was one of the tribes there in South Dakota that chose to banish Christie Nome from tribal lands. What was your specific rationale in making that decision?
We were upset on some of the comments she made, you know, and it's confusing. She sends us this letter and it states all these nice things that she wants to do. Then we hear on news how she's attacking the tribes, our youth. I think that definitely took the opened up people's minds when she mentioned the youth. You know, we're a people that we have to defend our land, and we have to defend our people. And to me personally, attacking our youth does not sit well with me.
President, when Governor Noem makes comments to the effect that, you know, equating tribes or making this connection between tribes and drug cartels, how do you deal with that? And how is it, you know, how are you able to communicate to the state of South Dakota, all the residents in the state, how are you able to communicate that this is misinformation or just maybe perhaps outright lies? How do you tell people that? How do you get that word out there?
We just continue to move forward, you know, with the daily business, and I know she's out there watching, and she. And it shows that she's continuing to take, I should say, she continues to take stabs at us, you know, in everything we do now. And it needs to stop, you know. The governor is supposed to represent the whole state of South Dakota. Well, you have the Great Plains region here. You got a lot of large land-based tribes in South Dakota. And right now, you know, it's just by a few tribes the first two tribes that banned her, that's 10% of probably the population of South Dakota. And mm-hmm. And I'm glad Standing Rock is standing strong with us also, because we have to protect our sovereignty. And by attacking making things worse is not the way to do that.
Right, right. President, I'm going to make a quick pivot here. Yesterday I had a chance to speak with one of your fellow chairmen, Ryman LeBeau from the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe. We spoke, and his tribe is one of the three, as well as yours, that banished Kristi Noem. I'm going to play a short excerpt of that interview. He talks about the decision by the Cheyenne River Tribal Council about Kristi Noem's comments, including her accusation that tribal leaders care more about their political agendas than student education.
We took it to council, and council felt strongly about banning the governor. Based on her comments, she made some derogatory comments about Native Americans, about tribes, about our children, about our parents, about our schools, and also made the claim that we're involved with the cartels, that we're benefiting from Mexican cartels being on our reservations, which is totally not true. These are lies. This is gossip. You know, and she doesn't apologize for it. When you call her out on it, everyone called her out on it, all the tribes, and, you know, she just doubles down. It's just politics for her. It's a game for her. And for us, it's, you know, this is, we don't play these games at all. Must be a boring place to be governor for her. Because
now, what do you see as the potential damage when a high profile political figure such as Governor Noem, like you mentioned, she's frequently, you know, talked about on the national stage as a potential running mate for Donald Trump. What do you think, what kind of damage does that really do? Not just to your community, your tribe, but other tribes elsewhere.
Yeah, I think it turns into more of a racist type of situation where these non-Indians, these white people are going to think, you know, we're associated with, you know, drugs and that type of illegal activity, and, you know, and we're not. And so it definitely, I think, you know, going off reservation, there could be some issues created from her comments, some racial issues, I think. And definitely saying it to her base of, you know, followers. So I think that's going to might have a negative impact on our people.
That was Cheyenne River Chairman Ryman LeBeau speaking to me yesterday about comments made by South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem. We've got time for one more call. James, listening on KUNM in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Hello, James. You're on the air.
Hi. How's it going? Thanks for having me. I just have one quick question. If these governors have no evidence for these claims, why are they spreading these remarks? Thank you.
All right. Appreciate it, James. Good question. President Starr comes out. Please respond to our caller. If they have no proof, if there's no validity to these claims, such as South Dakota tribes are connected to drug cartels, why is she making comments like that, and how's she getting away with it?
Yes, good question. You know, recently we declared a state of emergency. We also took the United States to court based off treaty obligations, and we won that battle the initial battle for the government to come in and sit down and compromise hash out what part of obligations what kind of resources the tribe deserves as far as law enforcement officers, equipment, things like that. So we came to the table, but the government hasn't responded. So we moved forward with that anyway. So while we were doing that, we declared a state of emergency because the lack of law enforcement, period. And I think that's where the governor is picking up a lot of the language there, is reading our state of emergency, which is fine, you know, in a way that's also reaching out to, I don't know, whatever her motive is, but she's using it in a political way against the Biden administration. And, you know, for me, that's a cheap shot on you know, for using Indian country for political gain. And that's totally disrespectful, you know, because, you know, my membership, people are dying. And when we're used like that, it just sends the wrong message. And it's not only my tribe, but it's the Great Plains region. It's nationwide now. It's nationally. As far as being underfunded, you know, the lack of treaty obligations nationwide is, I guess, in high demand right now. We see it now. We see it. We're over $3 billion underfunded. We're at least 25 plus thousand officers underfunded or short. Mm-hmm. Things like that that we're finding out, and that needs to be corrected. And it's things like that. Everybody's, I guess, throwing punches, I guess I should say.
Yeah, it sure seems that way. President Starr comes out. I'm curious to know, what about your relationships with other public officials in South Dakota outside of the governor's office? Do you maintain good relations with some of those other elected leaders, or are you facing similar issues with them as well?
Like I said, you know, we have no how should I say this? We don't engage in the politics side. We do have a good relationship with our delegation, our Senator Rounds, Senator Thune, and Congressman Johnson. I have no issues with them. They do. We do conversate regularly, you know, when issues come up. So. No, I don't have any problems.
And let's say Kristi Noem is the running mate with Donald Trump. What concerns you most about that potential scenario?
Again, you know, it's a political issue, and it's something that, you know, if that does happen, come down to it. The tribes are going. I believe will definitely suffer from it, as far as the needs of the tribes in general. It's definitely it's on a radar, definitely, but. You know, we also have to stand united as a Great Plains region. We have to support each other, and I'm hoping that we all stand together in this fight here, because, you know, Indian Country, we're faced with challenges every day. Every day I wake up, we're faced with challenges, and that's at all levels, all the way to D.C. Even at Washington, even with other nations, you know, we're all faced with challenges, and that's just the norm for Indian Country, and that needs to change. We need to be heard. We got to stop being ignored. You know, live up to them treaties. We have treaty obligations to uphold, and we need to stand on those treaties. That's a living, breathing document, and we proved that it's still alive.
We're going to have to wrap up the show now. We are out of time, but I want to thank all of our guests who joined us today. President Frank Starr comes out, Principal Chief Chuck Hoskin Jr., Chairman Ryman LeBeau, and Professor Richard Monette. Really appreciate all of their time today and their insights with regard to divisive rhetoric from elected leaders targeted towards Native Americans. Join us again tomorrow. We'll be taking a look at the biggest indigenous pop culture convention coming up this weekend in Oklahoma City. Hope you'll tune in. I'm Sean Spruce.
Did you know that over 4 million children have lost their Medicaid coverage? pediatrician, and American Academy of Pediatrics spokesperson, Dr. Kimberly Avila Edwards, discusses the ongoing public health emergency.
The biggest concern about children losing Medicaid insurance is the health risks they face without access to care. Families may also be forced to shoulder the full cost of medical expenses without the safety net of coverage.
Visit localhelp.healthcare.gov to learn more. The American Academy of Pediatrics supports this show.
April Kiwayatske Wabalize Wiyapi Hecha, O Kolaki Chiwa Okie, Wunji Opchayo, Medicaid Lahaki Unichapiktilo, Isama Somea Chihanta Lakoa Woki Obogalakayo, Nish Lil Yayo, healthcare.gov, Nish Lil Mas Apchayo, 1-800-318-2596, Lewot Khaneki, Medicare to Medicaid, Otieta Hiyapelo. Ho, Hechetuelo.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.